Today, we talk with Emily, and we learn about her battle with drug addiction. We also find out how her boyfriend secretly gave her drugs that were much stronger than what she thought she was taking, as we learn more about addiction. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. And we have talked a couple of times about various addictions this season of Learning More. We talked about sex and pornography addictions. We talked about food addictions. And today we're going to go a little deeper on the topic of addictions. I am joined by Emily Lehman. She's a podcast host and she hosts In Layman's Terms podcast. It's fantastic. Definitely check it out and we'll learn a little more about that. But first, let me introduce Emily. Hey, Emily, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's fantastic that you're here. And we've already, I'll just go ahead and say this for those listening. We've had a long talk, Emily and I, before this, and she's got a big dog that might interrupt the interview. So I'm just going to say it now that it's
please,
out there.
Yeah. And, Remington Russ might like make an appearance. Yeah.
It's funny because so when I first started doing podcasting, here's the odd pet that I had in the studio with me. And I think I'm the only podcaster to ever have this. I had chickens in my studio. I had three baby chicks because it was cold outside. We wanted to bring them in. So we actually had them and they would sleep next to me while I was doing my podcast.
So
I know
cute.
About animal disruptions.
I was going to say, weren't they chirping away? Oh my God.
Well, they would only chirp when, they're if I looked awake. At them, they would start chirping or whatever. But mostly they're just sleeping and hanging out. Now they're big chickens and they're outside and they're making a mess. And
Remington is asleep right now. So hopefully he stays asleep.
Awesome. So it makes podcasting a little more difficult though, right? So getting your podcast out there, let's talk a little about your podcast and what the topics that you cover.
Yeah. So my podcast, it really stemmed, I'd been wanting to do one for a while. Addiction runs in my family. I started experimenting with drugs around 14 years old. So having an outlet for me to discuss and communicate with others and also share other people's stories has been so therapeutic for me. It was definitely hard to start it. I wanted to probably start a podcast for over a year and I just would research it and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to do this. But I was too scared. And I'm like, do I really want all these people to know all of these deep, intimate things about some of the hardest times of my life? But going through and sharing my story and being on shows and talking with other people, it's so empowering and it's really refreshing to know that I'm not the only one who's felt like this or has gone through things like this. So being able to connect with other people and let whether it's a family member or a sibling or a parent or a friend, a significant other, you're not going through it alone. Other people are experiencing addiction. I feel like people don't realize how common addiction is today, whether you're from a blue-collared family or you're from the inner city. It really doesn't matter where you're from, who you are. Addiction does not see color or race, and it affects everyone. And I don't think people realize that all the time. So being able to gain awareness for that, I think, has also been something that I find really special. Just to get the word out there and to let people know that this is happening and there are things you can do to help those that you really do care about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like that because so as soon as you said, you felt alone, I would assume that people listening to your podcast have also felt that way. And now they're bonding with you and your guests and learning. Yeah, I'm not just going through this by myself. That's really powerful. But I can imagine how hard that is to start that type of podcast. I mean, it's hard for me at times. I open up on these podcasts. I reveal things about myself. I do it. Oh, hey, I revealed the chickens, but that's nothing compared to what you had to do. Does it get easier as you go along?
It definitely does get easier. I think the hardest part for me was when I was starting this podcast, my immediate family, like my mom and dad, they didn't really know the extent of really how bad my addiction was. So not only was I sharing like all of these vulnerable moments with strangers and people that I don't know, I had to like come clean to my parents about like being robbed at gunpoint, like all of these really kind of traumatic things that I experienced that I share on my show that obviously my parents are going to hear at some point. I had to really go to them and sit down and be like, this is what I'm going to do, and telling them all of those things, which I honestly never thought I would share with them. I thought it was going to something that I would just carry on my own. But being able to be open with them and that they know everything now, it's just really refreshing. And I know not everyone's family dynamic is the same, and I'm very grateful that, you know, my parents were understanding and listened to me. And I know that's not the same for everyone, and you have to find other outlets and other places to find support. But just finding people who can relate to even the smallest part of addiction has been so helpful in my recovery, because like I said, when I was like 22 years old and I was addicted to opiates and heroin, none of my friends experienced that. I didn't have anyone to communicate any of those issues or feelings with. None of my friends were doing that. I was extremely isolated. So I didn't even think at that time to, oh, let me like get on the internet and look for a podcast or like a Facebook support group. I never had that. I would have never thought to do that. And now today I'm like, oh my God, like, let me go listen to a podcast. Let me get on a Facebook group. Let me join a Zoom meeting. Like all of these things that I never, and I'm sure that I had them at my disposal. I just didn't know that they were there. So I couldn't access them. So I think a part of doing what I'm doing is just like help spreading that awareness, to find resources, to know you're not alone, find people who you can communicate with, because it really is a lonely place when you don't have anyone to really talk through those feelings and emotions with.
Yeah. And even reaching out for help at this point, right? Now I've talked to people that are considering doing the 12-step program, but that leap to actually do it, to get into that. Did you do the 12-step program?
I actually did not do the 12-step program. I did kind of my own like withdrawal, getting clean situation, which I do not recommend. It's not safe. I don't recommend that. But like I said, at the time I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't realize how dangerous it was to go through withdrawal from Xanax and opiates on my own, not with doctors. And a lot of my rehab for myself was I really fell into hot yoga, and that was like my sacred place. I would go every day, no matter how bad I felt, no matter if I was going through withdrawal, how shitty I felt, I would go to hot yoga every single day. And I would journal. And that for me, and I know that that doesn't work for everyone, and this is just my path and everyone's path is different. But for me, gaining that spiritual awareness and really reconnecting with myself is what really helped push me and get out of that rut of addiction. During my addiction, I was living with my partner. We were both addicted to substances. And I moved out of his house. And that also was a huge part of removing myself from the situation, going back, living with my parents, starting to work out, doing hot yoga, journaling. And that is just the path that worked for me. And I've been really lucky. I haven't had any relapses. And I know that's not, it's, I'm really, really lucky and I'm very grateful. And that's why it's been really fun. And I've learned so much about talking with other people who have been through things that I can't even, like going to 12 steps and doing all those things. And I've heard that 12 step is great for so many people. That just wasn't the pathway that I chose.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like lack of knowledge, like I've heard about AA. I know all about drinking, like AA. I very, very rarely heard about NA. No one ever really talked to NA, to me about NA. So had I, and I think also at the time I was probably too scared and probably couldn't really admit that like, I need to go to this. I need to do this. Right. Like, it's fine. Looking back on it, I absolutely probably should have gone to like a three, I don't know, like send away rehab something just to get like myself back in center and like in tune with like what I need to be doing. But for me, the yoga, it really helped. It just, I don't know what it was, but it was just like sweating out like all the toxins, all the bad, and just like recentering. So
how did you make the decision to quit?
I found out that the man, boy, whoever we want to call him, man child that I was living with at the time, like I said, addiction runs in my family. I grew up in my dad's sister was a heroin addict. So my whole life I've been exposed to, I know what drugs can do. I've seen it firsthand, but of course I have to learn things the hard way. And I myself fell into my own addiction with opiates. And I had found out that my partner had started giving me heroin instead of Percocets. And I was not aware that that had happened. And I remember calling him because I literally just Googled like heroin in rock form. The image came up. Literally what's sitting on the bedside table is exactly what's on the image. And I'm like, okay, like this is not okay. So I like called him and I'm screaming at him, like, how could you do this? Blah, blah. We'll never admit it. But I think something just clicked inside. And I called my dad and I was like, I don't need you to ask me any questions. I just need you to bring a truck. I need you to come to my house. I need you to get everything out of this house and I have to leave today. And that's what happened. I just moved out and I had to really refocus on like, I was close to losing my job. I was falling asleep at work. Like HR is like, what's going on here? And like, I at the time was like, I'm not really sure. Like something must, and that's, I was starting to put things together. I'm like, I'm not feeling the same. Like the drugs have changed. Something has changed here. So it's just, it wasn't like I had hit like a rock bottom or like I was homeless or like something traumatic happened. That wasn't, that didn't happen for me.
Well, I would say that's, I mean, that's pretty traumatic as it is, though.
No, yes. I mean, that's yeah, it is. But I feel like a lot of people think like a rock bottom is like you lose your house, you're homeless, you're like really dirty, like all of these things. For me, it was just that I could not believe that he did that. Like I'm sleeping next to you every single night and you could literally kill me. And you're not telling me like I'm doing this. And of course I'm doing drugs and I'm participating in substance abuse, but I'm thinking it's an opiate. Not that it makes it any better, but it's a totally different drug. And then I'm mixing Percocets with Xanax. And then here it's just, I'm like, what? There's so much. And I'm just like, this is not me. This is not my life. I'm not this person. And you know, like we talked a little earlier about like signs, I guess, of how you can maybe tell if a family member or a loved one is starting to maybe dabble into drugs or does have an active addiction. For me, in a lot of younger like kids, I feel like these days with the like opioid epidemic, I feel like doctors prescribe so many like pills. My brother literally just got shoulder surgery 3 weeks ago, and I think they prescribed him like over 56 oxys, and he's didn't take one of them. So it just goes to show that I think for me, drugs were kind of always around and accessible. So it started off as kind of like, oh, like this feels really good. Like, wow. And then literally before I knew it, months and months and like years had gone by and I'm like, oh my God, like this is the only constant I've had in my life is these pills. So for me, I started really isolating myself from my family. I'm a really big, like, I lived 5 minutes away from my parents. I would go home almost every night for dinner. I'm really close with my dad. Like, so I really started like retreating from them, not really going out and being social with friends or anything, just kind of staying literally just inside to get high, basically was what all I cared about. And then it didn't help that at the time, that's what like my circle of friends were doing too. So it was just like a little like pill party where we just like all sat around and got high and literally do nothing, just sit. It's just like,
right.
But I think it, like I said, I didn't, like I started, I'm 29 now and I started dabbling around with pills probably like 19 or 20. So I like really did not know how addictive or dangerous Xanax or Percocets were. I had no clue. Like I really was not educated at all. And I feel like a lot of people weren't educated on really how powerful these medicines can be. And then it's too late. And then it's like, okay, how many times can you go through withdrawal? How many times am I going to feel like this? Like, it's just like so taxing on your body because it's like, while you're going through withdrawal, you feel absolutely horrible. And it's like, you know what can take the pain away, but it's not gonna, it doesn't benefit you to go backwards. It just hurts you. So it's just this vicious cycle of trying to get out of that rut, I think.
Yeah. And I've got to ask this, going back to the man child.
Yes.
Did you press charges on the man child?
Charges on the man child. No, I didn't. No one's ever even asked me that. I've never even thought about that. No, I actually just had a conversation with the man child actually a few weeks ago. One of our really good friends recently passed away from an overdose. One of our really good friends. And he was taught, we very, very rarely speak because honestly, it's just too much for me. The floodgates open. It's a lot.
Totally.
It's
totally understandable. Yeah.
But I had been waiting and waiting for him to finally admit that he had given me heroin. Like I told you, I think at the beginning of the show, I've been waiting years and years for him to actually admit it. On that phone call, he was like, I am so sorry, like that I got you hooked on that, like blah, blah. And it was such a moment of like, oh my God, did you just like, I never thought I was gonna get that apology or acknowledgement that like, hey, what you did is beyond, like, that is not cool. And so for him to actually acknowledge and kind of understand meant a lot to me. He's still, I mean, he's not sober or anything. So for him to acknowledge that and be able to understand that was a really like a piece of closure, I think, that I never thought I was gonna get. So it felt really good for him to like actually acknowledge that big piece of that puzzle.
Well, just kind of knowing at least.
Yeah.
It's a different thing to know that somebody at least knew that they were wrong. It just, it makes you feel better in some weird way. Like you, I'm sure you got into that thing, that mind frame of like, okay, did I do something? Was it where you've got that self-doubt. So to hear it, that is some good reassurance there. And it's good that you stay away from them. It's good.
He still definitely is struggling, which is really mm-hmm. hard. And it's hard for me to see that. How did I get out? Why am I clean? And why are you not? It's the like, right. Oh, like, how, you know, and it's hard to see friends and like people you've loved just turn into someone who you don't really know or recognize, you know, after long years of drug use. I mean, the brain and everything that happens. I mean, it's just, it really takes a toll on your body. So it's just better to keep those boundaries.
Exactly. What do you do now? So you mentioned another friend that had passed away from mm-hmm. an overdose. When you start to see some of those signs that you mentioned a moment ago in your friends, what do you do? Do you actually step in? Do you say something?
Yes, for the most part, I try to, because when I was like 19 or 20, I had another best friend. He passed away from fentanyl when he was 19. And a big part of that was, do we tell his parents or not? Mm-hmm. My friends chose not to do that. That is something that I disagreed with and that has always weighed very heavily on me. So after that situation, I promised, and my dad did not raise me that way. My like growing up with an aunt who is in addiction, like you see something, you say something. So I've always held a lot of that just weighs very heavily on me. So yes, I do. With my friend Devin, he had been struggling for probably like almost 10 years. He's one of my friends who I like him and I and man child, we all started doing drugs together. So he, you know, like I would, he was actually on my, he was one of my first guests on my podcast actually when he was sober. I think it's like episode 8 or something, but yeah, so like I always try to, like if you have a friend who is, you know, in active addiction or in active recovery, just like I don't want to say like it's annoying when people like, you know, they're like checking in on you to just like check in and be annoying. Like no one wants to be that like Karen mother. But I think it's important to just let your friends or your family know that you're there no matter what, no matter what time of day it is, like no matter what the situation is. I think a lot of addicts are scared of being judged. And I think that's, and it's a lot of shame. And I think that's why people don't really come forward and ask for help. So I think just letting them know that there's nothing to be ashamed of. And that's honestly what really helped me start doing my podcast as well. It's like, I have no reason to like be ashamed of my past. I'm not embarrassed of it. I've had people like come up to me and say like, really, are you really going to do that podcast? Like, do you really want people to know this about you? And I'm like, honestly, why does it matter? Like, if you're going to judge me, you're going to judge me and that's fine. But if at the end of the day, my message or story can help one person, one family member, whoever it is, that's fine mm-hmm. for me. Like I've lost a lot of friends to addiction and like drug abuse, and I don't wish that on anyone. So if there's anything that I can do to help you or your family or whoever it might be, I would love to. I think it's so important just having the support system, because if you don't have a support system, you're not going to make it. Like you have to have some type of support, whether it's a Facebook group, it's an NA meeting, it's your family, it's your book club. Like, I don't know, whatever it is, you just have to find that outlet for you and make sure that like you support your friends and they know that they're supported. I just think that's the most important part, because going through my recovery, I didn't have that. I didn't have people like in my corner being like, woohoo, like you can do it. Like I did that all by myself, like very isolated. My family didn't even know, like none of my friends knew. So I think just letting people come to you on their own terms and just listening. I think listening and being open is so, so important, and just not judging them. No one wants to be like addicted to drugs. It's not like, you know, like they're not happy with themselves either. They don't feel great with themselves either. Like they want to get better, but it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of support, and finding that support or whatever your outlet is, I think is the most, most important.
Yeah, so in talking about, you mentioned your dad, you called your dad, don't ask any questions, just bring a truck, let's get out of here. And he wasn't aware of anything of the drug addiction problem. When did he become aware?
I think my parents thought it was like a little bit of like, you're smoking too much weed. And then, you know, my doctors are like, you're getting really skinny. Like, what's going on? And I don't know if my parents were totally oblivious to it. I think my mom started noticing a little bit, but I don't think they really knew until I told them that the man child was going away to rehab for substance abuse and really how bad things had gotten. And obviously I told them that I was obviously dabbling and like actively using like with him and stuff. Like I'm okay. I don't have any issues like right now or whatever. And then they really watched me live through going through that breakup and like that addiction phase with him, because it's like the phone calls and like all these like just totally like absurd things. And my dad was honestly so helpful during it, because growing up, my aunt Lori would call my dad during like our family dinners, and she would be like, I'm going to kill myself if you don't send me money. Like, you know, like all of these really dramatic like things. She's spiraling. She is just out of control. So I grew up listening to that and how my dad would handle those situations. So it was interesting to watch the tables turn, and my dad is now giving me advice on how to handle these situations with the man child, because he's already done it with his sister. And so he's just like, you have to, like, you can, I think the most important piece of advice he gave me was like, you cannot help those who don't want to be helped. And you can't, if you don't like, there are so many things I can do for you, but if you don't want to help yourself, then I don't, like, I can kill myself, bend over backwards to try and help you. But if you don't want to get sober or whatever your end goal is, then I really struggled with that with the man child, because I myself, I feel like I'm a fixer. Like, I want to fix what I can. And no matter what, I cannot fix him. He has to fix himself. So when I finally was able to understand that and let that like really sink in and grasp that literally no matter what I do, it does not matter. That's when I really started, I think, to feel like a little bit of relief, or like my anxiety like wasn't as bad with the situation, because I'm like, the once again, like the guilty, why am I sober and you're not sober? Why did Devin Joey die and I didn't die? Why this? And it's like, you can sit here and compare all of these things, but at the end of the day, like, it's about you and you only. You have to like put your oxygen mask on before you help others. So they say. So
a question on that. So this was somebody that you were living with, the man child, and is it hard for you to trust others in relationships now that you had that experience?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I honestly, like, yes, I was young and dumb at the time, but like, I thought I would like marry the man child, honestly. Like, we lived in a house, we had a dog, like, you know, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is it for me. I'm like 29 now, I'm laughing, like, thinking about that. But it's like, to, like I said earlier, like, lay in bed with someone and to think that they're doing everything they can to protect you, keep you safe, keep you out of harm's way. And you find out, okay, not only did they like switch substances and not tell you, they like switched it to freaking heroin. Like, you don't like.
Yeah. How are you getting past that issue as far as being able to trust somebody again? Or are you? Is that still in the process? Because I can imagine that would be very, very difficult in that case.
I for a really long time after that had walls, you know, up pretty high. It is really hard for me to trust people, but I feel like when you meet the right people, like, and you know you can trust them, the trust kind of comes a little easier, which is kind of what I'm experiencing right now in my life. I just kind of got out of like a long-term relationship that was really unhealthy. And I'm like, you know, out dating or whatever. And I'm like, the trust part of it is really interesting to see to who like the walls will drop for, or how much like I'm willing to like let them drop, because I've kind of been seeing this guy you know, for a little bit, and I'm just like, I don't want it to be like too serious. I just want it to be like fun. Like, I don't want to like get into over my head. I just want it to be like light and easy and fun. So I am seeing myself still, like, my walls are still up, but I'm not as guarded, but it's still, I think I'll always have a little bit of doubt in people after that.
There's a little PTSD from that situation as well. I mean, it was a traumatic experience that you went
through. You just don't ever expect someone to do that. I would never do that.
It's always hard to get into the mindset of somebody that's going to do something like that. You know, it's like, so this makes no sense.
It's like, just want to ask me and be like, hey, we're going to like switch substances. And I could have been like, okay, hell no, I don't want that. Or like, given me a choice. But I think an important part of the substance switching from Percocets to heroin. Percocets, you know, on street face value, I've been out of the game for a little bit, but I would imagine they're still around $1 per milligram. So 30s are around $30 to $35. That's pretty expensive for one pill. When I was using those substances, I was probably doing 3 or 4 30s. Every day. So that's upwards of 100 milligrams. So that's every single day. Heroin, on the other hand, I've never bought it. I have no idea, but I've heard it's a lot cheaper. So that's why I know that the man child decided to switch our drug substances. And I know that's why a lot of other people end up getting on heroin too, because the pills and everything, they just get so expensive. You can't keep up with the habit. It's so expensive. So then you buy something that's way worse for you, but cheaper. So I think that's really where that kind of happens. It's like you can't sustain this habit, so you get something cheaper.
And that actually brings up one of the signs of, you know, when you're looking for somebody addicted, Like the typical signs, one of them is a need for more money, you know, an unusual need for more money, yeah. Right? You've got changes in friends or activities. As you mentioned, you know, you suddenly were isolated. You didn't want to be around others. So all that's also changes in behavior and physical changes that you had mentioned. You know, all of a sudden you're losing weight, changes to daily routines. It sounds like, you know, that happened. So, you know, there's these things that you can look out for. And, you know, I mean, without shaming the person, I think it's always a good thing to have that conversation with them, you know, because, you know, it might be too late. Like, it, you know, I've had people that, you know, I wish I would have said something to in my life too about addictive behaviors. And I didn't, and I wish that I did. And you know, you don't want to end up regretting that decision to not say something later. So
no, I think you definitely don't. You'll feel better. We've both experienced that. And I can promise you that just sending, like with my friend Devin, I never wanted to annoy him, but I always wanted to just like let him know that I'm thinking of you. I love you. You're on my mind. Like you can do this. Like you're doing well. Like just keep up the good work. So sometimes just like little messages of encouragement, like really can go a long way when you don't really realize it, especially like if you're struggling, like, and you're having a hard day, like that one little message can really like reshape someone's day or life. So I think it's important to just check in.
And it's fantastic that, you know, you are doing this podcast, that you're putting your message out there, and then, you know, you're helping others with that. And I love that we did that today. You know, I mean, we did sort of the beginner's edition of this, but to get more information, please do go listen to your podcast. So can you tell people just a little about your podcast and your website?
Yeah. So my website is www.inlaymansterms.com. And I'm sure Russ will give the spelling for everything in the bio.
Exactly. And
basically, my podcast is pretty much just me having honest conversations with my guests, whether it's about mental health, addiction recovery, self-development, in spirituality. I love to discuss everyone's unique journey and kind of influence others on how that they can get to where they want to be in their journey, and providing listeners just with tools and guidance for their own toolbox moving forward in their recovery. And honestly, at the end of the day, my mission is really just to annihilate the stigma that surrounds addiction.
I love that mission. Great job.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining us today and helping us learn more about addiction.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you, and thank you for rating the podcast and sharing it with your friends. Hey, those ratings really do help. We got a couple more this last week. Fantastic. If you could do that in whatever podcast application that you're listening in, it does help to get the word out about the show. And that is always something that I welcome and appreciate. So thank you so much for that. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. We encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. Next time on Learning More, we're going to flip it over to money. Yes, money. How do we talk about it? And how much wealth do we actually have, and how do we maintain that wealth? We've got two episodes on money coming up on Learning More. Those will be out. One will be out next week, one the next week after that. The best way to get those, of course, is to subscribe to Learning More. So please do so in whatever application that you're listening to. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.